Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 372 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 20th of April, 2018, as I record this. So today I have a solo show on what I learned from London Book Fair, including the challenges that authors are facing and what they are doing about it. So some interesting points of view from authors at different points in the journey, as well as my thoughts on blockchain for books, monetizing mobile reading apps based on a session I went to with China Literature and Wattpad, and tackling the question of competition between authors, which is something I've been thinking about. And of course, any mistakes are mine in terms of attribution, or if I mess up any technical things about blockchain, which is possibly likely. I took handwritten notes at the fair. I didn't record anything. So I hope all the authors who I've quoted will be happy with what I've said. But anyway, I wanted to reflect on what I experienced at the fair and some of the sort of more macro things. And it was interesting. So moving into publishing news, obviously I'm going to, the whole main segment of the show today is about publishing, but the hot sheet just came out by Jane Friedman and Porter Anderson, which is a great source of news, and mentioned one thing that I didn't see at LBF, but was reported later, which is that non-fiction deals were the big talk of the fair and debut fiction author deals were down. And they quote Michael Kader at Publishers Lunch, who wrote, coming off a year in which some of the biggest names in fiction significantly underperformed and backlist drove book sales, perhaps it's not a surprise to see how heavily publisher investment has moved to non-fiction. So I think this is really interesting because one of the themes that I've talked about in the main section of the show is fiction authors looking at writing non-fiction as a way to make other forms of income, which is obviously something I do myself. And also sort of thinking how this could ripple out if this is a publishing trend. Fewer debut deals might mean that more new authors start by going indie and then traditional publishers might pick them up later once they have a backlist and buy the whole backlist, which is actually the model of Amazon publishing. And of course, as many of us have seen, APUB authors are dominating some of the niches now. And very interesting how they, Amazon publishing, will often offer to take the whole backlist. And as we know, I think as indies, the money is often in the backlist. And most of us, our monthly income is based on books that we might have written years ago. So this is really interesting. Also, with some of those big name authors saying, as Michael Kader said, significantly underperformed, will they see their advances drop and maybe look at other means of income around self-publishing? So I actually think that this may well have quite a ripple effect. We shall see. In the futurist segment, Google unveils Talk to Books. So this is their new thing. You type a question into basically Google, books.google.com/talktobooks, or our links in the show notes as ever. And AI-powered tool will scan every sentence in 100,000 volumes in Google Books. So note 100,000 volumes there. This is not the whole... this is not everything. And in fact, I tested it and none of my stuff's in there, even though I do have some books on play. So 100,000, they really did curate that because there are obviously millions of books available in the world. Anyway, this Talk to Books generates a list of likely responses out of books, and then you can go in and find out more. Ray Kurzweil, who introduced this, noted that this is not meant to replace keyword search, but it uses semantic search, drawing on the ability of the tool's AI to understand natural human language. And Ray Kurzweil now works at Google and he leads a team studying how to train computers to read and respond like humans. And this is, I think this is really interesting. The Verge, which is a blog I really enjoy, reports on this even further. It talks about the technology behind the semantic search, a way to enable algorithms to learn about the relationships between words based on examples of actual language usage. And Google has also released a game, Semantris, which tests your word association abilities and using the same software that powers Talk2Books. Now, to me and to Verge, as they say, these tools are designed to test the software's semantic understanding. And basically, it's the next phase of development. These types of games and, you know, these are ways of getting the rest of us to teach these tools about how we process language. Now, I'm fascinated because I think semantic search and natural language processing are exactly the things necessary to move forward the seamless AI tools that would write, translate, and read aloud from our text, and or write new ones, obviously. And I've talked before about the importance of building a personal brand over time, demonstrating that you're a human. And in fact, Seth Godin on his Akimbo podcast, which I really enjoy, has been talking about wabi-sabi, or the imperfection that humans do seek in some way. You know, I'm not talking in perfect sentences, and you can tell I'm human, I hope. Also, this very interesting article on Singularity Hub, talking about bias. So bias is one of those human traits, and we all see a lot of bias at the moment in the political landscape around how people are writing, how people are. And I mean, you guys are listening to me, and I'm biased in terms of my publishing views. Obviously, it's based on the way I've chosen to live my life as an independent. But it's interesting. This new company called Nowhere has released an AI bot that aggregates news from hundreds of sources and creates three versions of each story, one skewed to the left, one skewed to the right, and one that's meant to be impartial, which I think is fascinating because this bias, or this, you know, this sort of preference we have for various viewpoints does shape our own voice. So to me, this idea of an AI with bias is, you know, will start to feed into how the voice of these AI tools work. So anyway, just some interesting things that I've been looking at this week in terms of futurist stuff. So my personal update, I am actually, I've been working so hard on editing How to Write Nonfiction. It's the type of really detailed line editing that you can only do for, you know, certain periods of time. And it's been doing my head in. I thought, you know, some chapters are quite clean, but some chapters I've really had to rework, and it's been quite a challenge. But the sun has come out, and so I've been doing some editing, then going for a walk, and then doing some more editing, going for a walk, and basically sort of working through it. And it will be with my proofreader the week that you hear this, if you hear it real time. And I've booked my audiobook narrator, and we'll get to work on the print edition, the workbook, and the course. So it's all go in the How to Write Nonfiction area. I'm really pleased with the book. There's definitely some tough love in it. I've definitely put my stake in the ground around nonfiction. So that's quite interesting. The pre-order is up for the ebook, and everything will be out end of May. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments on the show. And remember, you can always let me know what you're doing while you're listening. At The Creative Pen on Twitter is the best place. So Bethany Rose Smith says, listening to the show on my commute to corporate. Today, the first day I decided it is my temporary job, creative entrepreneurship or bust. And great to hear that, Bethany. And I think this is a really big mindset shift. And if you are someone who is interested in moving into being a full-time writer or creative entrepreneur, I think that deciding you're going to opt out of the corporate ladder is the biggest first decision, because there's so many things that you do in a job that are not necessarily necessary to do the job. They're necessary so you can climb the ladder. But I remember making that decision, and it was a pretty big one. So go, Bethany. Joe Slaughter says, really enjoyed the podcast with Emily. Insightful and fun to hear, as all your podcasts are. I hear you on the way to and from work in Dallas, Texas. John Howard says, loved listening to the latest podcast while cooking spag bol for the family, almost as much as I love the idea of being boss. And Baron Frosty sent me a really nice video. I have a sugar skull magic eye that changes as you walk through my front hallway. And in the video, he walks past the skull and it changes. That's awesome. I love it. And Brittany Fichter, listening to the podcast around a strawberry picking day with the family and lovely picture in the strawberry fields, which made me want to sing Strawberry Fields Forever. But I'll spare you. I'll spare you that. And then finally, this is not about the show, but I spotted one of Lindsay Baroka's tweets says, and Lindsay is at Goblin Writer on Twitter. And she said, I'm instructing new writers not to make the mistakes I've made, like naming a main character the German word for anchovy, which made me laugh because I try and check the meanings of all my names of my characters. And sometimes I do, like Map of Shadows, the names of the characters have meaning, like they, you know, they mean traveler and different things like that. But it's funny because when I wrote One Day in Budapest, the bad guy, I came up with what is a very common name in Hungary and, you know, the really bad right wing kind of Nazi guy. And then basically turned out that I'd called the main character after the prime minister. And if you know anything about Hungarian politics, this may or may not be a good idea. So yes, when you are writing fiction, do check the meanings of your words in different languages. So today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from them in a minute. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, The Secret Library Podcast, Ellen Oliveira, Jennifer Elysian, Karen Murray or Marais, and Rebecca Taborchkin. Thank you, everybody. And thanks to everyone who's been supporting the show for years at this point. I was talking to someone the other day and just said, you know, the podcast at one point in my life around sort of 2014, 2015 was a liability in that I felt that it was taking way too much time. And then I introduced sponsorship and Patreon. And basically now it's a core part of my business. And I love talking to you guys. I love being able to share stuff with you, and I hope that it continues to be useful for you wherever you are on the journey. So if you would like to support the show on Patreon, I do an extra Q&A every month, which I really need to do for April. The editing's been taking all my time. But basically, you'll get that extra Q&A. And also, yeah, for less than a coffee a month, you know, why wouldn't you? So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Right, here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with the mega London Book Fair session.
Are you trying to reach millions of readers around the world? Kobo Writing Life is the fastest, easiest way to upload your ebook to the Kobo store. Our free self-publishing platform lets you keep full control of your books. You set the price and territories, and you can edit your content anytime, with updates going live to the store typically within 3 hours. You'll get benefits from going direct that you cannot get anywhere else. A price scheduling tool where you set promo prices ahead of time. Incredible merchandising opportunities through our promotions tool. The ability to reach library readers by uploading to OverDrive right in your dashboard, and more. Best of all, you keep your full royalties. 70% for ebooks priced $2.99 and up with no cap, and the ability to price free anytime, no strings attached. We never ask for exclusivity, and we are always here to help. We listen to author feedback, and you, yes you, play a central role in improving the platform. We can't wait to roll out some super exciting changes in 2018. What are you waiting for? Go to kobo.com/writinglife and upload today. Have questions? Email us at writinglife@kobo.com. Someone on our dedicated author care team will get back to you within 48 hours. Publish with a retailer that is completely dedicated to books and passionate about helping authors achieve their publishing goals every day.
Okay, so these are my lessons learned from London Book Fair 2018, subtitled trust, visibility, and multiple streams of income. So I've been going to the London Book Fair for the last 6 years, and even though it leaves this introvert recovering in bed with a migraine, it's worth attending for what I learn and who I meet every year. And just a little aside, thanks to everyone who I met, and apologies if I was a little bit exhausted or just it was very tiring, and I did spend a whole day recovering in bed afterwards, but it was great to meet people. And in this article, which I'm going to mostly read, but as ever there will be some asides, I'll go through my lessons learned and some thoughts from authors I interviewed along the way. I wrote a lot of notes on and asked people a lot of questions, and my own reflections on sessions I attended. So number one, your art is everything. Your art is nothing. So this is the challenge of the book fair for me, and it probably is the challenge every year, to be honest. And it's both humbling and exciting that when I realise it. So walk around the massive halls and witness the extent of the publishing world. From the dominance of the Big Five with their multi-tiered platforms filled with busy meetings and the billboard-sized faces of brand name authors, to the niche publishers of motoring atlases, museum hardbacks, comics and graphic art, poetry, spirituality or gift stationery. To the stands of international publishers, China to Latvia, the University of Chihuahua to Abu Dhabi, from Russia to Catalonia. And on, down the back of the fair to the wholesalers, and witness what is a shocking sight for authors. Mounds of books, reams of covers, all discounted to rock bottom prices, bought in bulk and shipped around the world to secondary markets. When you walk around the fair, it makes me realise how minuscule the indie author ecosystem is in comparison to the juggernaut of massive publishers and the vast number of deals that go on around the world. The majority of book sales are not measured by the Amazon bestseller charts, which is so much of what indies get obsessed with. And much of the publishing industry happens in this business-to-business space. We just see a slice of trade publishing. But of course, we can't do everything. We must focus on what continues to make us creatively happy and financially successful. But it is clear that the industry as a whole is a lot bigger than our corner of the market. And I think that's always good to realise. So when I walk around the fair, I'm proud to be part of the publishing industry, but I also feel out of my depth, overwhelmed by the possibilities, and yet also aware of being on the edge. I've had a similar feeling while scuba diving, watching fish dart around, entire ecosystems living their lives oblivious to me. And therein lies the paradox, because we have to understand that our art is everything. We have to think that it is the most important thing in the world to write, to publish, to reach readers, or we couldn't go to the blank page every day. But we also have to let go and understand that we are but a brief spark in the firmament of the publishing industry. Number two, the continued challenge of visibility. I met up with a lot of indies at London Book Fair, some of them making multi-six-figure incomes and others just starting out. I asked many of them about the challenges they were facing and also about what they were doing to deal with it. Unsurprisingly, most authors pointed out the continued challenge of visibility in an ever-growing sea of books, which, as I just mentioned, becomes even more visible when you're at the book fair because you're surrounded by a sea of books. Best-selling crime author L.J. Ross said that she faces the challenge by focusing on story first. As she said, without a product to sell, there is no business. She stated that it is easy to lose the yardstick of what set you apart in the beginning, and to always remember that you are not writing to impress other writers. The reader is king. Literary magical realism author Rowan Quine talked of the difficulty of locating a path through the thicket of book marketing and the importance of continuing to learn, even if you don't naturally have the marketing gene, as he called it. Rowan talked of playing the long game and developing strengths as well as expanding your comfort zone over time around marketing. He makes sure his book metadata is correct on all the vendors and plays an active part in the Alliance of Independent Authors, networking with other indies and building relationships along the way. Poet, crime author and diversity activist Dan Holloway talked of the difficulty of having your art taken seriously as an indie author. Dan speaks on panels at bookstores and literary festivals and finds there are often more questions asked about how he publishes than the themes within his books, which the traditionally published authors are always asked about. I'll sort of interject in here. I have found that in many ways, but in recent years, what I found at Crime Fest, particularly in Bristol, and to some extent at Thriller Fest in New York, I have been seen as JF Penn, and I have not been asked about my publishing direction, merely about the themes of my books. So I do think it is possible, but I think it probably happens as part of developing a relationship with an event over time. Back in the thing, Dan's response is to move into speaking to corporates around creativity, and he's also developed a game, Mycelium, which teaches creative thinking. Children's author Karen Inglis spoke of the continued difficulty of not being able to market direct to the reader, but noted that there is potential in using paid ads for print books aimed at marketing directly to parents. She noted that if you want to write for children, you really do need to enjoy meeting your readers, going into schools and libraries, as well as developing relationships with teachers, librarians, and parents. Karen has a non-fiction book coming out soon, How to Self-Publish and Market a Children's Book, and she'll be coming on the podcast to talk about it later this year. And Karen has been on the show before, but I'm excited to have her back on to talk about that. Helena Holm, author of Nordic Contemporary Women's Fiction, talked about how the continual changes in the self-publishing industry can be a real challenge for authors to keep up with, and notes the importance of attending industry events, listening to podcasts, woohoo, reading books, and also being active in the author community to stay informed and taking advantage of things as you discover them. Prize-winning literary fiction author Jane Davis mentioned something I've heard all over the indie author community recently, that ebook sales drop off once you stop paid ads, and that continued sales are dependent on continued payment for advertising. Jane is meeting this challenge by developing relationships with book bloggers and building her email list, investing more time instead of more money. She's making a big effort with her latest launch, doing print ARCs, advanced reader copies, and focusing her marketing efforts around launch, as opposed to just putting the book out there. This issue with ever-growing ad spend was echoed by thriller author James P. Sumner, who said that it is increasingly expensive to maintain a consistent sales level on the Amazon store without paying for more ads. James is looking at alternative ways to expand his brand, doing some creative writing tutoring and preparing to launch an online course once he has honed his material. He also recommends getting involved with the indie author community, building a network amongst your peers and growing together, which often provides marketing and business opportunities along the way. So after talking to a lot of authors about these things, my own thoughts on increasing ad spend crystallised at the fair as I talked about this topic with thriller author D.V. Burkham. And I really am postulating, is this the end of co-opetition, which is something I've talked about before and is in How to Market a Book, because I don't believe in a zero-sum game for books. I truly, truly believe that everyone in the world should write a book, or more books. Like, everyone should write a book, because every person who writes a book will buy and read far more books than they could ever produce. And in that way, we can become a self-sustaining industry. So just think about your behavior. However many books you've written, even if you are one of the mega, mega, you know, people who write lots and lots of books, you will still read and have read in your life far more books than you could ever produce. I mean, I just came off, I was just out listening to another podcast and ended up coming home and ordering five books. And one of which I just started reading over my lunch, and, you know, some others are coming in the post. And basically, you know, I spent this morning working on how to write nonfiction, and then, you know, went out and bought more books. So, I mean, this is what people who write do. So if everyone writes books, we will buy and read more books. So that's why I don't believe there should be any competition between writers, because there's more than enough for everyone. And it should be co-opetition, cooperating, co-marketing with people in your genre, like D.V. Burkham, who I just mentioned, who writes, you know, empowered female protagonist thrillers like I do. And she's a fantastic author. So, you know, we are stronger together. And that's a really important thing, and something I've always, it has been the basis of how I run my creative business. It's why I interview other writers on the podcast. It's why I feature them on my blog. It's why I tweet them on social media and promote their books to my email list. But paid ads have changed things, because we are now competing with each other. Because pay-per-click ads are all about competing for keywords and then upping a bid until you win, and then doing it again and again. And, you know, then a new rush for a certain niche comes out, and people compete for the same keywords, and then prices go up and your return is sliced. And in the end, the advertisers come out top because, you know, you keep going up. And yeah, that's the way it is meant to work. That is how pay-per-click ads work. So even though they are amazing, and yes, I continue to use paid ads for my own book sales and as a core part of my business marketing, so I definitely think that paid ads are important, but the majority of my writing business income is based on content marketing, which delivers targeted search engine traffic built from years of quality articles, podcasts, and videos, plus relationship building in my niche. And I cover this in much more detail on how to market a book. And I think it's quite key, really, that in How to Market a Book, I only have one chapter on paid advertising, and it's 70,000 words. So I think what's difficult at the moment is because paid ads are so popular in the indie space, people are forgetting that there are many, many, many other ways to market your book. So very important to think about those different things. And I am looking at building a similar content marketing based ecosystem for my fiction, because, you know, I hate the overdependence on paid ads. We have reached peak ad in some sub niches, you know, on Facebook, or, you know, I don't think AMS ads are oversaturated at all yet, but they've definitely become more expensive. So there are ways to use paid advertising. And as I said, I absolutely believe it's an important part of the business, but there are other things you can do. So really consider that if you are thinking about this yourself. Number three, pivoting towards multiple streams of income. So developing multiple streams of income has been my soapbox for almost 10 years now. And so it was really interesting to hear that one of the responses to the challenge of visibility is not to keep pushing or plowing more money into marketing, but adding other streams of income. This offsets the costs and also provides a wider and more stable base for an author business for the long term. And those writers who have gone full time are definitely looking at this. So both James P. Sumner and Karen English mentioned moving into writing non-fiction books to go alongside their fiction portfolio. And Dan Holloway talked about speaking and licensing his creative game. YA fantasy author Sasha Black talked about the difficulty in selling fiction. She said, "My nonfiction sells itself. I don't have to do a lot for it to bring in a fair chunk of change each month, but selling fiction is a lot harder." And although Sasha is continuing to use paid ads, she also mentioned diversifying income streams so as not to be so reliant on having to find her audience and sell books constantly. And again, I've been saying this for years, so I love having multiple streams of income, and I don't even look at ranking and anything like that. And it's a good, much more creatively stable life when you have other things, so you're not constantly worried about book sales. Alison Jones, author of This Book Means Business, which has come out recently, which is great, and publisher of nonfiction and business books, said, "Finding your readers is easier than ever because of the many tools we have, but those readers have limited amounts of attention." And it was great to talk to Alison, and we really talked about this, that yes, we can find these readers, but boy, have they got a lot of stuff to get through. I mean, obviously we're not just competing for other books, for people's attention with reading books. We're competing with Netflix and lots of other things, podcasts. In fact, you're listening to me now and you could be reading, but you're probably doing something else, so that's fine. So Alison talked about focusing on the book as part of a bigger platform, giving your readers a reason to care by drawing them in with podcasts, videos, speaking, and training, which can also provide other streams of income. And again, thanks as ever to everyone supporting this show on Patreon, because this podcast has become one of my streams of income and amusingly has enabled me to give up speaking. I really am giving up speaking because I can serve you better. Each of these podcasts is downloaded over 10,000 times, going up to sort of 15, 20,000 over time. And the show now has been downloaded 2.4 million times. So I can reach far more people with this podcast. Oh, and I looked at the stats. I just got getting excited now. This is not in the show notes, but 208 countries the show is listened to, which is amazing. I didn't even know there were that many. So very exciting. And your support of the podcast and my books and, you know, my courses and all that means that I can help you hopefully with things like this. So this business model, I think, is super important. Now, Alison, going back to the show notes, says that speaking enables you to incorporate bulk sales into your business model, including the book as part of your speaker's fee. And if you are a speaker or want to be, it is a very, very good form of income. It can be significant. Obviously, you're being paid for your time, but it is a very good way to get your work out there. Alison said, "The purpose of the book is not to become a bestseller, but to build a business and create a funnel into higher revenue products." And I'm going to go into this in much more detail in How to Write Nonfiction, which is available for pre-order now. And depending on when you're listening to this, it will be out in May 2018. So that includes sections on business models. And this balance is something I'm more and more aware of in the indie community. There is a pervasive focus on vanity metrics like sales ranking or number of books sold over profit and money in the bank. And many consider it better, in quotation marks, to reach number one on Amazon in a category, even though they might have paid for a ton of advertising, than to bulk sell thousands of books that no one will ever know about, but then they have thousands of dollars in the bank. As Orna Ross has noted in the Blockchain for Books white paper, which I'm going to come back to, many authors crave attention more than money and overvalue their work emotionally while undervaluing it commercially. Yeah, so I think this is super important. And when you walk around the book fair, as I talked about, what you realize is most of those companies are making money without anything happening on Amazon. It really is like a completely, it just opens your eyes to the other business models around books. And this is something I'm very much getting into. Orna Ross is a literary fiction and creative nonfiction author, poet, and founder of the Alliance of Independent Authors, and of course a regular on the show. She was talking about money and the letter to money in the show in the first week in January this year, and has been on the show lots. She's a very dear friend of mine and someone I consider to be a creative mentor. Orna told me that the biggest challenge for authors is to understand that you are in a business and what that means, as well as knowing the value of what you create. Orna has challenged herself to understand her comps or comparison titles in more detail and to dig deep into the micro genres around her books. And circling back to paid ads, those of you who are doing things like Amazon ads and Facebook ads know that this is exactly what you have to do to really dig deep into genre. Orna also stressed the importance of looking outside the publishing world for ideas. Definitely something I felt coming out of the fair. And as I mentioned back in November when I spoke at the Upreneur Summit, I think we often have more in common with the tech and online entrepreneur community than the publishing world, because most of us don't trade in physical product. We do sell physical books, but we don't have them in our houses. You know, they're print on demand. So someone who does trade in physical product, but does it print on demand, is Joseph Alexander, who has also been on the show, author and publisher of books on playing the guitar. And Joseph mentioned that music shops in the UK are often sewn up with exclusive deals that means he can't work directly with them and keep his sales on Amazon. But instead of just getting angry about this and raging against that machine, he has started to do deals with music shops in other territories, expanding his streams of income. And of course, doing translations is much easier when your books are very short, as in the text in the books is short, because a lot of Joseph's books have music in them. So his actual words can be translated much more easily than many of ours. So in this way, Joseph is expanding his streams of income whilst keeping his core sales in print on demand on Amazon. And he noted that staying nimble gives the indie author who owns their own rights an incredible advantage, as you can do deals very quickly. And this taking control is certainly a wider trend, as Sam Missingham from Lounge Books noted that fewer authors are letting publishing happen to them these days, and that more authors are empowering themselves around book marketing and their own creative business. Number four, who to trust? The importance of personal relationships. So as the London Book Fair bustled with deals, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg faced the US Senate over the leak of millions of user records to Cambridge Analytica. So it was pertinent in terms of timing that so many people I talked to brought up trust or the lack of it. A number of people pointed out that there are increasing numbers of scams targeted at authors right now, and a lot of voices in the self-publishing space that perhaps don't have the experience that they are touting. YA fantasy author Sasha Black spent a lot of time on the Alliance of Independent Authors stand at LBF and talking to new writers about their publishing options. She was surprised at the number of people who had been given or read really bad advice. She said, "I think that for newer indie authors, there's a seriously saturated internet full of crappy advice and noise. If you don't have a network or community of writer friends, then it's hard to distinguish between the fluff and the quality advice." Sasha recommends triple checking the credentials of anyone you're considering working with. Seek out advice from authors rather than just industry people. Read reviews of books before buying them and recognize that even good advice might not work for you. As Sasha says, "There is no right way to build your business. I've met a lot of authors and none of them have built their businesses in the same way." And just as an aside here, I really love what Sasha says. Yes, you need to. And obviously, I'm offering advice in my books, although I have been doing this for 10 years. So I think I have some credibility in the space. But if your aim is to build something different to what I've built, then don't do things in the same way. And the same thing is, I used to think that I wanted to be like Stephen King. But then I realized that actually I need this side of me, which is about helping others. I need the podcast. I need to talk about what I'm learning. I want to help you on your author journey, but I don't want to be a publisher. So I need the nonfiction self-help, which Stephen King, even though he has written on writing, I think he was probably forced into that. So I'm not a purely fiction author, but many of you listening perhaps are. Or maybe you just want to keep your day job and write for fun. Maybe you want to do photo books. So find people to model who are running their business in the way you want to. And this is so, so crucial. Figure out their business model. So if someone's giving you advice, find out how they are making money, because they will be invested in that solution. So for example, if someone's giving you advice on being a full-time author, but they are working a day job, then you know, what are they talking about? So this is really important. So talking about service providers, Ricardo Fayette from freelance marketplace Readzy talked about the importance of developing relationships with authors over time and checking how long a company has been in business before working with them. So I first met Ricardo at London Book Fair years ago, and he is probably at every single author event in the UK, and also many in America. Many of you will know Ricardo Fayette because he has been incredibly good at going to all the author events, all the conferences, and helping people, as well as building Readzy's own credentials. And I knew Ricardo and was aware of Readzy for probably 3 years before I was like, okay, I'm really going to look at your business model now, and I'm really going to see if you guys are good. And they are. They're brilliant. So I highly recommend Readzy as a freelance marketplace. And I'm an affiliate of theirs. And my link is thecreativepen.com/Readzy. And of course, Ricardo has been on the show before as well, so you can listen to him. So there's an example of trust through a relationship. Another person I talked to, I had a recommendation from Joel Friedlander, the book designer, and then I interviewed Stephen Spatz from Book Baby. And because so many people ask me for a full service recommendation, I went and looked at some of the options and decided Book Baby was the best one. So I talked to Stephen at the fair, and he said that his team talks on the phone to lots of customers every week, and that the personal touch is what he focuses on to set Book Baby apart from the more hands-off author services companies. He calls this people-powered publishing, citing personal relationships as the key to trust in an increasingly digital world. And you can listen to the interview with Stephen Spatz a couple of months ago now, and I will be speaking. It's kind of officially my last speaking engagement, unless I do something in Australia or New Zealand in December, but I'm speaking in Philadelphia in November 2018 at Book Baby's Independent Author Conference, and there are still early bird tickets for that, which I'll link to in the show notes. And I should have said, the show notes will have lots of pictures from London Book Fair, so you can go and see those. And the examples with Ricardo and Stephen are online relationships developing into trust over time, and then real life business opportunities and streams of income based on that trust. So really good examples there. And as ever, I only recommend people that I've really, really vetted and who have a good rating on the Alliance of Independent Authors Watchdog, which is really, really useful. So thriller author and SPF podcaster, many of you know, friend of the show, Mark Dawson, mentioned how many unsolicited emails he gets through his author website every day and how persistent some of the pitches are. Now, while those of us who are established in the author space just delete the emails, and I get lots of them every day too, new writers may well respond and be drawn in. Mark said, if you are asked to pay anything to publish, then think twice. Do your research. Of course, you should be paying, or you should consider paying, for professional editors and cover design, but be wary of author services companies that don't have your best interests at heart. And I want you guys to weigh up Mark's comments. Obviously, you know, I am recommending some of these service companies like Readzy, like Book Baby, who essentially do offer these services, and I think they do have your best interests at heart, but they are still a business. As am I. I have your best interests at heart, and I'm still a business. Okay, so just in terms of dealing with unsolicited mail, my specific suggestion is to install a plugin like Gravity Forms so that people can't email you direct. And I have that on the Creative Pen, and it cut down my unsolicited mail considerably. And also, if you are at the point in your journey where you have a virtual assistant, you can actually direct that form to your virtual assistant and they can handle those emails, which is what the wonderful Alexandra does for me. And that step alone gave me probably at least an extra hour a week and a lot less stress. So the main answer to the trust issue is becoming part of the interwoven author community and building relationships that develop over years. So I spent time manning the help desk at the Alliance of Independent Authors, Ally Stand, near the Author HQ, along with lots of other indies taking their turn at helping others. And it was great to meet authors of all levels, from those just starting out with one book to those making a very good living as an author. And I've become friends with many of these authors over the last 6 years, and I learn something from them every year, and it's great. And since the Alliance launched in 2012 at London Book Fair, we kind of, you know, at least I see these people once a year. So many of the new authors coming by the booth were asking about the benefits of joining the Alliance. And of course, there are tangible benefits like the publications, training, advocacy, contractual advice, and a private Facebook group where you can get personalised help from authors at all points in the journey. But more importantly, as with any professional organisation, it's about what you put in and how you help others. And as a firm believer in social karma, as you give, you will receive. And I really truly believe that. And if you want to get the most out of an organization like the Alliance of Independent Authors, you have to be an active member and help other people. You know, if there are questions in the Facebook group that you can answer, don't wait for me to answer them. You know, you answer them. Also, what was funny is I was interviewed for a podcast at the fair. And the very first question that the interviewer asked me was, how can you keep giving away all your information for free? Why are you so generous with what you know? And it was funny because that question really demonstrates that the world outside of the indie community is much more protective of information. You know, there's this veil over the publishing industry, and not everyone lives in the open and giving indie author world that I know and love. But if you do want to be part of that open and giving indie author world, come and join the Alliance of Independent Authors, and you can go to I have a link, surprisingly, at thecreativepen.com/alliance or allianceindependentauthors.org or selfpublishingadvice.org if you want the blog. Number 5, mobile storytelling. Okay, we're going to move into the more futurist stuff, because I attended a fascinating session with China Literature and Wattpad on the continued rise of mobile storytelling and the business model for authors who are part of it. And I guess this isn't futurist, this is happening right now, but I think it will have more of an impact over time, as I will come to in a minute. So Wattpad has been around for years now, and Ashley Gardner has been on the show a number of times, and I have a couple of books on Wattpad, but I've always thought of it as more of a marketing platform. These days, it has over 65 million monthly visitors, and Wattpad Studios has taken stories into film, TV, book deals, and other intellectual property rights deals. China Literature is an online reading and writing platform with 191 million monthly active users, which is crazy. That's like 3 times the population of Great Britain in a month, mostly on mobile devices. They have over 6 million writers and nearly 10 million books on the platform. China Literature and they have announced their expansion into the West, looking at translation rights for their massive catalogue. They noted that serialised storytelling is not new and has more in common with how Dickens shared his stories in magazines. Some of the most popular stories on their platforms are retellings of martial epics with hundreds of chapters. And in fact, that's why some of Dickens' books are so massive, because he was getting, you know, money per episode. Readers on China Literature might consume 3,000 words per day in a single chapter and come back tomorrow for the next instalment, with some stories stretching out for months. China Literature is part owned by Tencent, one of the world's biggest internet and technology companies, which overtook Facebook earlier this year in terms of market capitalization. And if you are into investments, as I am, you can buy, international shares in international funds that do work with Tencent. So I've been looking at that. Absolutely. I think it's incredible. It also, but I'm not an investor. I'm not a financial advisor, blah, blah, blah. This is not investment advice. This is just my opinion. So Tencent also owns WeChat, China's biggest messaging and social app, and which also hosts WeChat Pay, which enables seamless mobile payments. And the other one, the other big one, is Alipay. And the Financial Times recently reported that cashless is king in China. And the article goes into Ant Financial, which is Alibaba's financial arm, driven by Alipay, the other mobile payment system in China. Quote from McKinsey saying, these companies are like Facebook if it had a bank on top of it and everyone had a bank account. There is nothing like this in the West. Ant Financial and Tencent make up more than 90% of China's $16 trillion mobile payments market. This idea of mobile payments is the big futurist thing. And again, I'll return to that in a minute. So the session delved into the development of the platforms and also outlined the ways that authors are making money through mobile storytelling. And this was where things shifted for me when I was listening to them. So first of all is micropayments per page read. So China literature has developed a culture of paying for content, and mobile payments make it much easier to incorporate this. So someone is reading on their mobile device and they essentially move on to the next chapter and they're charged a tiny amount for the pages that they read as they turn the page. And they've agreed to that and it gets charged through the mobile payment platform. Wattpad's Ashley Gardner pointed out that this model only works in a country with billions of readers, although I would argue that this model would work in a world with billions of readers if we forget about countries and we forget about translation, which I'm going to come on to. The Amazon equivalent of Pages Read, which is of course Kindle Unlimited and KDP Select, is not actually, it's not a payment per page read. It's a payment that is a monthly pot, which is then split by pages read. So it's not technically, you know, someone reads a page and you get that money. It's that the pot is split. Plus, it's also, you know, it's just different. So I like this idea of actual pages read as opposed to them deciding how much everybody gets. So the other ways that authors are making money are through tips from readers. Now, this is fantastic. And a bit like how you guys support the show on Patreon, because, you know, many of you are putting in $2 a month, but $2 a month from lots of people makes up a decent amount of money. And this is exactly what's happening with these writers on China literature. Some of them are getting thousands of pounds for their writing. So that's just brilliant. I think it's amazing. And the power of these micro payments, micro tips can really add up. So if you're thinking, oh, well, I'd love to support the show, or I'd love to support that other person on Patreon, but I, you know, can't afford it, you can't, even a tiny, tiny amount makes a difference. Also, advertising revenue from ads shown alongside stories on Wattpad. So and Ashley Gardner said that some writers have even turned down publishing contracts because the advances wouldn't be enough to replace that revenue. And that's the kind of similar to a YouTube revenue model. And then also rights deals from Wattpad Studios, as the top stories and authors have been licensed into film, TV and book deals, and really amazing, you know, Netflix films, their own TV series in the Philippines, multiple book deals, really. And I think it was that Wattpad Studios has published a couple of hundred books as well. So it's really interesting. Now, you might be thinking that this is all far removed from most authors in the West, but I am fast forwarding to when translation is no longer an issue because of AI, and when there are millions more writers out there and millions more readers with mobile phones wanting to read who are used to paying for content. That is the key. And the next billion users of the internet are young and mobile first. I'll link to the Google. If you just, I'll put all of this, obviously all the links are in the show notes and all the pictures and everything. But if you go on the Google blog, just put into Google next billion users of the internet, it's just fascinating. But they are mobile first. And that is a key point if you want to think about your business. For me, I'm thinking about my business for the next 40 years, 40 to 50 years. I'll be like 95, whatever. It's all good. I'm still going to be doing this podcast, you know. Oh, well, look at this mobile first, everybody. I've obviously had too much coffee today. Apologies. Anyway, if you want to reach these people, you need to understand global, digital, mobile, and micro payments. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. Number six, blockchain for books. And this is definitely a futurist subject because blockchain for books is still in its infancy. And my main recommendation is to go and download the Alliance of Independent Authors Blockchain for Books white paper. It is excellent and very comprehensive. And it is basically a book. I mean, it's more than a few pages and it's very good. It has some technology stuff, but a lot more about the design of really being truly independent and the possibilities and some of the companies and authors who are already doing things on the blockchain. So this is current, as in blockchain for books is not a future thing, but it is a future thing in terms of widestream mainstream adoption. So I will be quoting from the white paper for this section, and it goes into far more detail than I can. So this is basically an introduction. So what is the blockchain? It's a digital ledger that records transactions as a chain or string of data and stores them on a decentralized network. Parties to the transaction can see and validate the same version of the truth. It enables the settlement of transactions in a network without reference to a central authority like a bank or, for example, an agent, publisher or distributor in between the author and reader. Blockchain allows instant value exchange directly with the content creators without the need for being routed through an intermediary. Yes, that's immediate payment, which is really interesting. The white paper states, the way that blockchain reconfigures digital text, books and media, legal agreements, monetization of content, and payment pathways makes it a technological breakthrough for publishing. It can be used to maximize the value of the author's intellectual property and moral and monetary rights. It could also deliver an author-centered financial model for the first time in publishing history. And I don't think that's a big... It's not a big enough statement, really, and the penny is slowly dropping for me around blockchain. Probably the most important thing to be aware of is that if we want to design a new ecosystem that is creator first, that's the reason we have to care about blockchain for books. So if you're thinking, oh, it doesn't apply for me, it's all just an app, whatever, well, that's how we got into the situation where we have very dominant companies that own all the data. Also, we have the incumbents developing their own systems on blockchain, taking the financial industry, for example. It's kind of meant to be in a utopian sense, this way of doing payments without tracking. And obviously people get worried about crime and things like that. But sometimes you want to do things even though you're not a criminal and you don't want to be tracked. I'm pretty sure we're all aware of privacy at this point and what that means. But it's interesting that, you know, big banks like HSBC are looking at blockchain technology for, you know, replacing their clearinghouses between cities. Countries. So if you do a bank transfer of multi-currency at the moment, which I do, then it can take days for money to arrive because it goes through these various clearinghouses. Now, this gets rid of the need for that and could radically change the back offices of big international transactions, legal stuff. This has a huge impact on world stuff. I mean, this is a big deal. This is not just books. This is not just an app. This is a sort of a fundamental change in some of the ways transactions are recorded. So very, very interesting. So the potential opportunities of the blockchain for books really means truly global potential for direct sales with immediate payment to the creator without the dominant distributors or middlemen currently in play. Smart contracts could transform intellectual property rights with transparency and security. As Joseph from Publica said, if you can say it, you can program it. So, for example, you could encode immediate payment to you on purchase or split with a co-writer or with anyone else you'd like to get a cut. For example, many authors say, oh, I want to give money to charity. Well, this is a way you could actually encode the payment to charity within your smart contract, so it just happened immediately on sale. It also enables resale of the book and truly trackable assets. So what are the things to be careful of? Well, I think the main thing is this is such early days, and I love the possibilities of the blockchain, but I'm not jumping into some of the sites that are available right now, like Publica, like Steemit, like some of the others. I'm not going into it. But what I do think is important is getting involved, understanding it, looking at the potential, and, you know, supporting the Alliance of Independent Authors on, you know, being an activist for trying to design a future ecosystem where the author, where the creator is central. Otherwise, we can end up with a future where we're, I guess, not the center, which is basically where we are now. So let's try and make the future better than now. And this really ties into what I was saying around micropayments. I mean, micropayments with blockchain, for example, is a fascinating possibility. Probably the other issues are the various coins used for blockchain transactions are not necessarily easy to transfer into money in the real world. And there's a lot of hype and disinformation. So if you are going to give one of the different sites to go, then just have a look at how those, what coins they're using and how they work. Also, you still have to find readers and market your books. So if there are no readers on the apps that you're using on the blockchain, you will find it even harder to sell your books. So until there are more mature ecosystems, it will be hard to get traction. So this is kind of something that you could look at as an extra. Again, you know, definitely I think things will be quite different in a year's time, but what's very important is to be aware of this and to make sure that we advocate for creator-central systems in the future. So yes, read more at the Alliance of Independent Authors, allianceindependentauthors.org /blockchain-4-books, and links in the show notes. Also, there's a recording of the launch at the London Book Fair, which was a really interesting session. And also contains a warning for those who might jump in too fast from the lovely Dan Holloway. It was a great mix between, you know, really exciting stuff and also some skepticism. And also Publishers Weekly covered the launch and featured Suki Jutla, the lovely Suki, who's interviewed me on this on the podcast before and for the Alliance events. And Suki is the first blockchain number one best-selling author, which is just fantastic. There's not many of them on there, but well done, Suki. That's fantastic. So yes, definitely check out and yeah, keep an ear out for blockchain in the future. And finally, number seven, tips for attending book fairs as an author. So perhaps I've inspired you to attend a book fair, maybe London or Frankfurt, New York or Sharjah or any of the others. They are publishing industry trade shows where agents and publishers primarily go to do rights deals. Authors can attend and there usually are some sessions for authors, but the fairs are not aimed at you. And that is a really important thing to remember. And that's also why it's quite interesting, I think, because all the session, most of the sessions that go on are aimed at publishers, and you can get a very different perspective that way. London Book Fair has an author HQ area where you can attend education sessions. But remember, the people running the book fairs are businesses, and the sessions are often run by people paying for the privilege. So author beware. But in London, the Alliance of Independent Authors has sessions that are sponsored by lovely companies that we think are great, like Ingram Spark and Kobe Writing Life and all the people who sponsor the podcast, Drafter Digital and Book Baby and everyone else. It's fantastic. And also they Obviously, check out the Alliance Watchdog. I have a short link, thecreativepen.com/watchdog, and that will take you there. Okay, so the Alliance of Independent Authors has had an active part in London Book Fair since 2012, and hopefully will now have a stand every year. It was great to have a stand for the first time and a booth, which had a booth and also did a lot more events and sessions. So well done to Orna Ross and the team involved in that. It was really brilliant. So if you want to attend, some recommendations: get the schedule well in advance and plan the sessions you're going to attend. Organise meetings well in advance with anyone you want to meet, and leave enough time to wander around and check out interesting things. Definitely manage your energy, especially if you're an introvert. 2 days back to back with too many meetings was overwhelming for me this year, and I thought I'd scheduled enough breaks, but I didn't. And I'll link in the show notes to a brilliant advert from the Latvian group called #IAmLatvia#IAmIntrovert, and they had introvert beer. They were selling introvert beer, and then in the toilets they had this great cartoon of, like, you know, people hiding in the toilets going, "Oh, I'm so glad to be alone." It was very funny. There's a lot of introverts in publishing. Also, join the Alliance of Independent Authors and come and hang out with the indies. We are a friendly bunch, and the benefits to being a member are listed on the site. I'll link in the show notes. I am a founding member and advisor to the Alliance, and it's my number one recommended resource for advice by authors for authors. RJ Fawaz, adventure thriller author and first-time visitor to LBF, recommended downloading the app, and all the fairs seem to have an app now, and it helps you plan your day efficiently and get the maximum out of the fair. She said it gives you a list of all the seminars and talks happening, and you have the option to book it into your calendar on your phone. Also, take your time to walk around, have a look at what's going on, take pictures, and don't be afraid to go up to stands and ask questions that might relate to your work. All the professionals are helpful and will give you leaflets and will advise you. Also, remember to take note of restaurants and cafes for coffee. So in conclusion, it's been a bit of a mega session today, but it was great as ever. I leave the London Book Fair exhausted, but excited about the possibilities ahead for writers and whatever changes will come. Technological, whatever, political, you know, all the above. Authors and creators remain at the heart of publishing. Without our writing, they have nothing to sell. So keep writing. So whether you choose to work with a publishing house or go indie, I hope that you will value your creation and yourself in the years to come. Exciting times. Right, so maybe I'll see you at LBF 2019. Happy writing for now. I hope you enjoyed my solo show today and found some useful snippets wherever you are on the journey. And again, any mistakes are mine. So if you're like, "Oh, she's totally wrong on that," then apologies. Please do leave a comment or tweet me. Let me know what you thought of the session today. I like to do these kind of more thinking pieces, but obviously they take a lot more work than doing just an interview. So do let me know if you found it useful. Next week, I have an interview with Joel Friedlander from thebookdesigner.com on how to produce a premium journal. And regular listeners to the show know that I did go down the path of looking at whether I could do a creative pen journal. And because I've been journaling since I was like 15 and have lots of journals. So I really wanted to do my own, but I backed away from it when I hit a load of unexpected complications, many of which we discuss in the show. So if you're interested in producing print only products and are really interested in how all of these print things are done, Joel is fantastic at this, and you will really enjoy next week's show. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.